This is RSBNB Update, episode 606, recorded Thursday, February 16th, 2017. Fishing for updates. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Just Sirion and myself here this week. Nice little quiet week before the calm or before the storm of Double XP weekend. Ain't that right?
Yeah, I won't be there.
What? Where are you going?
I am actually doing a game jam this weekend.
Oh, so you're doing your own kind of game jam in addition to the Jagex game jam. All right. Well, that's not too big of a problem because you will still get some double XP the following week when you get back, as we talked about last week. But double XP weekend is imminent. You guys are probably listening to this podcast on double XP weekend. It was a very quiet week in RuneScape this week. Not too much to write home about. Part two of the Valentine's Day event, which is another collect the pieces by skilling. And then you'll get some rewards along the way, community event like we had with the Blackbeard event and the previous events in Port Sarum and whatnot last fall. So, fabric strips, collecting fabric strips through skilling and combat activities, daily challenges, and then you talk to Wizard Dedit and get rewards from that. And part one of the original Valentine's event is gone. You're no longer able to get the rewards from that if you missed out on them. So
that was really, really harsh.
Yeah. And
given that we had 2 weeks to kick to like get any missing Blackbeard rewards, this was the sudden change all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I mean, the first part of the event was really simple to do because you just had to spend a small amount of time there. But without spending on treasure hunter keys, you had very little chance of actually completing all of the rewards. Mm-hmm. So that definitely threw some people. But anyways, part two is now here. You collect these scraps, you know, while you're skilling or on Treasure Hunter, you know, basically like all the other past seasonal events that we've had. And when you manage to complete them, you get a grand prize devotion sprite pet that you can use that'll either follow you around or as overrides. You can collect up to 1,000 fabric a day, and 10,000 will get you all of the rewards. The event lasts for 14 days, and, you know, in addition to this, there's some interesting rewards that you can get. So it's a question of, am I going to spend the amount of time, you know, going for this, or should I maybe just spend some rune coins and complete it off the bat? I think lots of people will say on this. And, you know, this is the same format of holiday event that we've seen, I think, 3 or 4 times now. And I'm wondering what the general sentiment of the player base is going to be.
I don't know. I felt that it was really quick after the Blackbeard event, which had exactly the same format, to have something like this again.
Yeah, most definitely.
We had it a few times before. I think the first time was as part of the Falador event, wasn't it?
That's right.
And that was also the best executed one, I think. That one was actually sort of fun.
Yeah, that had the dancing knights through that bug.
Yeah, I still have the gift somewhere around. Yeah, and then there was the God Wars Dungeon 2 was also pretty good. But
the
heart of that,
and because there was lore behind that one, right?
Yeah, and now it has become this like thing that they just do, and I don't know. It's so interesting. It's a fair chance for everybody to to get the rewards without spending rune coins, because it is possible to get the reward.
Yeah, it's just a matter of how much you want to play to get the 1,000 a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can get the Devotion Sprite costume in addition to the pet, so, and some XP stuff along the way. So it's not, you know, something that you're definitely going to need to get, but it's there. So we'll talk more about what this means going forward in the rest of the year in just a bit. But this is indeed part 2 of the Valentine's Day event. I think part 1 was more interesting because you could get the tangible rewards right away, you know, like the bouquet of flowers, the loved up emote and rest animation and all that. So I got a few of them. I kind of wanted to get a few more, so I think I got all that I can, but I don't know. It wasn't something I was going to spend bonds on to get Treasure Hunter keys. So more on this in just a bit. So patch notes this week. A few interesting things here, but there's definitely one that I think us as questers are going to find. Well, it'll be interesting to see a reaction, because I don't know if the reaction is going to be the same as mine. So we'll get to that one in just a few bullet points. But first off, player in response to player feedback, White Knight initiates now wear red and partisans wear blue as before. I personally wasn't aware this has been changed. Were you?
Nope.
Yeah. All right. Now some changes to the invention perks from last week. The chance of Prosper giving a clue scroll is now doubled. That's good. I think. I'm not sure what the chance was before.
People seem to be like complaining that it wasn't that useful, so I don't know, probably fair.
Yeah. Also, the Tinker perk now has a 5% chance per rank to give plus 25% XP, as opposed to the previous 1% chance per rank to give 10% XP.
It has...
And I think it was also taken down to 3 ranks to this rather than 5.
Oh, okay. Because look at like the first rank is, I don't know how much it is, but it's going into Avatar territory, or am I wrong?
Ever which territory?
Avatar, clan avatars.
Oh, okay, all right.
Let me. I'm trying to do them all, but I'm not very
right. And, you know, 15% chance to get plus 25% XP. I think that's, I think personally that's more of a tangible XP boost than it was before.
It's now 1.25% overall per rank.
Yeah.
So that gets you up to, say, like, just short of 4% if you get rank 3, which is slightly more than a clan avatar in the same world.
Right. But in any case, that's a lot more than the previous 1% per rank to only give up to plus 10%, right?
Yeah, that would give you a 0.5% bonus.
Okay.
I think at the maximum rank or something.
Yeah, and I think 10% is a nicer thing to see than 25%.
Hmm.
So, I think that this is the right way to go with this. 3 blocks of 5% rather than 5 blocks of 1%. So
no, it's 5 blocks of 25 versus 1 of 10, like it was buffed in both.
No, I'm talking about the chance for it to activate.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, that has also increased. Both have increased.
Yeah. The Pyromaniac perk now gives an increased chance of obtaining Bernie the Skilling Pet when triggered. I think that makes sense because you're dumping an entire inventory of logs onto that bonfire, so you kind of want that to happen. So that's good. I think that's all there was for the changes to the invention perks from last week. Let me just have another quick gander at this to make sure that is indeed true. Yeah, that's pretty much it on this note. Now, here comes the patch note that I think some people are going to have differing opinions on, and I'm curious to hear what you think. We haven't talked about this yet, so this is the first time Sirion and I have shared thoughts on this. The Shield of Arav quest has been reworked to no longer require a player to partner in the opposite gang. Players can now choose their current gang by talking to Straven or Katrine. Changing gang allegiance is blocked during some parts of the hero quest. Okay, so this effectively makes it so you can solo Shield of Arav, or the Hero's Quest.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I thought the idea of having to work together with another player in a quest was very novel, very interesting.
Yep, yeah.
But... It is quite difficult. Like, you have to go through the chore of finding a partner.
And right.
Even if you're in a questing clan, questing clan like ours,
it's not an easy thing to do.
It is, like, because Shield of Arif requires you to not have done the quest to get
yes,
the shield health.
That's right.
And it's really difficult to find a partner. So while I think this concept of cooperative questing is really cool, I'm sort of happy that they made it optional and made it a bit easier to get into it without having to find a partner on the forums,
yeah,
because that is an extra step you have to take, and it takes you out of the immersion. And I don't know, if you had a friend to do it with, that's nice. And you can still do it,
right?
But like, you can now make the choice.
And see, the thing is when I was doing these quests, I actually was going through them at around the same time with someone, so I didn't have to, you know, go hunting out for people to do this with, much like would be the case nowadays. And, you know, well, I think we at Clan Quest have prided ourselves on, you know, being a place that people can come for the Heroes Quest in particular, because, you know, anyone can help with that one, or anyone could help with that, right? I think that the fact that we did that for so long is good, but at the same time, I agree with you on the immersion side, but I also am a bit disappointed because I think this was a very unique thing in RuneScape questing, and it kind of made it feel as though that's how a quest would be if we were in real life, so to speak. You know, like, let's say you were in opposite gangs. You can't just change your allegiance in a gang instantly, right? So
no. But, well, like, this one, like, it's still blocked during Heroes Quest. You still have need a partner there. The point is, you don't need to find a partner that is the opposite gang. One of them can just change. So
right,
that's going to make that quest easier as well, to find a partner. You just need another player, no matter which gang. So that basically doubles the number of players you can find.
Right. Help. Well, I guess that's okay for us then, because we can still offer help for the Heroes Quest then.
Yeah. We can still do that. And, I mean, I think it's not too bad, and there's still this factor of working together, but there's less of a blockage there. And I don't know, maybe if Jax ever wants to try something like this again, it should remain optional, but maybe give like a bit of a bonus, make it a bit easier.
Give something akin to an early bird bonus that stacks if you go out and, you know, actually seek out a real person for this.
Yeah, maybe, for example, and make that possible to do, and make it so that you don't need a player under certain circumstances. Like, any two players could match up.
Right.
Make the quest repeatable as well, and you solve the issue.
Yeah, that'd be
basically
good. That'd be good. Also, just speaking of repeatable quests, let me just pull this up here. You know, something that's actually being worked on in RuneScape right now, that came from Jagex today. Mod Raven tweeted that he is working on replayable endgame. And quote, "Think I've managed to get a Crise in there and given Sliske the staff as he should have. Win." So, some work on everyone's favorite quest there.
So on Twitter, he was also looking. What he implemented is that you can skip the maze.
Oh, good.
You can actually go into the maze and only have the interactions in the maze.
Oh, good. And that would be good for us who missed it because of technical problems.
You can choose what order you do. You can choose, like, which one you see, you can change everything, you can change your allegiance. So you can basically exhaust every option if you want to.
Yeah, that would be good. And I don't think we're going to understand that quest in full until we're able to go through all the various plot lines and, you know, plot it out on a map and see what exactly the options were. Because, I mean, the way we did it and the way we talked about it back then, it just didn't make sense, did it?
No.
You and I were having PTSD over Christmas break on that quest.
Yeah, basically.
It was a sour taste in our mouth when we were eating our Christmas dinners.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, back onto the patch notes. The Shield of Arav quest, and to the lesser extent the Heroes quest, have received a variety of quality of life improvements with this, so that's good. Once again,
do we know what they are?
No, they're not listed.
Yeah, that's a bit of a shame.
Yeah. If Jagex out there listening to this, there are people in the audience, mainly me and Sirion, and I'm sure a few others listening to this podcast who love release notes and would love to see the details of these QOL improvements. Combat scaling in the Death of Chivalry quest has been tweaked to be fairer to high-level non-members, since they have restricted access to high-level gear. Dying in each of the tomb's combat encounters will also gradually reduce the difficulty. You know, I think that's how it should be. If you die in a quest, it should get easier along the way.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you don't want to be bashing your head against a desk, you know, after you've been trying to do this thing for who knows how long. And I mean,
it should be done in a way that doesn't give itself away too much.
Right.
You don't want to have the player feel less for doing the quest in easy mode.
That's right. It's like were you on for Children of Ma and the easy mode?
No, I wasn't. But yeah. I know it.
What'd you think of that easy mode?
Didn't like it that much.
Okay.
I think it was good that it was there, but also like being unable to do the wheel one and then just being off it like, well, you can't do that. Maybe you should try easy mode is a bit, I don't know.
Yeah.
It felt a bit patronizing.
Yeah, that was quite a bad suggestion like that. And, you know, now that we're talking about quests, I'm wanting to quest, but we don't have any quests to do. Oh, but 2 weeks, we have one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Elemental Workshop Part 5. Maybe
the
gnomes.
Like
maybe a prequel to Guthix since it's fifth age and uses divination. I don't know. That's one of those three. That's got to be my guess. I know there's lots of you guys out there who will probably send the lynch mob forward if it is Elemental Workshop Part 5, but I absolutely love that. All right, some changes made to Nex, Angel of Death, reward curses. You and I talked about these earlier in the week. The changes are they no longer occupy your overhead slot, meaning you can now use Soul Split with them. They're no longer removed by abilities such as Sever, and the per drain rate has been increased slightly for these. So now they are effectively true replacements for Torment, Turmoil, and Anguish.
And I think that's sad.
Why is that?
See, RuneScape is a linear game. Like, you can choose what skill to train first and that kind of stuff, but in the end, everybody gets the same stuff at the same time. And there is pretty much one optimal loadout at the end of the game. Like, just slap on all the tier 90 you can find, and then there's... You can probably blast your way to every situation fairly easily. And I know that Jagex wants to add more variation to the end game. And
right,
that's
like
why that's
invention
why
tech trees, mastery, and the new mining and smithing rework, two examples right there, right?
But that's also why there is power armor and Henker armor, for example. Like, they want to be able to give choice and be like, all right, in one case you might want to do more damage output, while in the other case you might really need to tank that damage, and maybe you need both roles within an encounter that you do with a team. So there's some variation in the end game, but it's very limited right now, and especially in skills like prayer and magic, there is very little motivation to not go with the best option, which, I mean, in case of prayer, it always used to be Soul Split with Turmoil or the other one, one of the other ones. That's the best combination of phase you can use, with the exception of some places where you want to use Protect from one of the attack styles. And by making a version of Turmoil or the other two, what you do is you create the trade-off between I want to use Soul Split and a weaker version of that family, or I want to use a really strong version of the family,
yeah,
but I can't use Soul Split.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting trade-off, because it means that players can make a choice there.
And it's not only that they can make a choice, it's in most cases they will be forced to make that choice.
Yeah, they can say, okay, like in this encounter, this makes more sense, in that encounter, that makes more sense.
Right.
Then if it's balanced well, you'll even get players that have a personal preference for one or the other. that is a bit how two-handed versus dual-wield works. Like, in theory, they're balanced to exactly the same damage output. It's just you can't choose one over the other, and that is interesting, and that makes the game more interesting, that makes the game more varied, and makes sure that nobody looks like wearing the same thing, using the same stuff, using the same strategies.
And
that is exactly what we need in RuneScape right now, especially due to most of the population being in that higher tier. So this change makes me sad.
Right. And, you know, I think a very interesting point about this is that, you know, you would be forced to make a choice. But when you make that choice, you could say, oh, it's, you know, it's only 2 or 3% difference. But at the end of the day, when you factor in the debuff and when you factor in how much damage you're doing on a high level NPC, that does make a difference. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just Googled for the heck of it, next AOD curses. And the first result is the Reddit thread talking about how these curses will no longer occupy the overhead prayer slot. Now, you know, I honestly think that the fact that when you search for these curses, the first thing that comes up is this fix we're talking about right here. I think that's a mistake. And I think that that highlights that, you know, this was largely driven by community discussion on these curses rather than perhaps internal balancing. Well, you know, a curse really doesn't really affect the balancing of the game that much. It was a unique balancing mechanic, like you said, or game design choice that has been now taken away because of this, the players have spoken up because the first two results, lo and behold, are about fixing the curses. So,
I mean, it's not that the choice is entirely gone because the prayer drain rate has increased.
Right.
If you don't have the prayer drain rate to spend, then sure, you can go for the lower levels. But, I mean, nothing cannot be fixed by more prayer pots, basically. Just throw money at the problem in this case. So I think that's a very small thing to factor in. And I think we can both agree that these three AOD curses are now vastly superior over the original three.
Yep.
And that sort of brings us into another problem. By making this a trade-off situation, you don't have to feel bad for not having the three overpowered super cool curses, because the other option is just as viable. But now all of a sudden these curses are a lot more potent than the original, and there's this extra motivation of getting them, because if you want to do the best, you need these skills. And I think that's another thing that would be bad.
Yeah,
I think
most definitely
people should have a damn it.
You should,
sorry, my home turned on.
Oh, that's okay. I think I get where you're going. You should have the ability to succeed without needing to, you know, fit in with the so-called game meta, so to speak, is, I guess, what this is shaping up to
mm-hmm.
be. You know, and I totally agree with that. And, you know, in some games, meta exists because that's what works and that's what everyone is playing and that's how you counter things. But in other games, the meta just exists is because that's what people are doing. You don't necessarily need them to be successful. I don't think RuneScape necessarily has a meta at this point. You can't really call a preference of magic or ranged a meta, because melee is inferior to those two when it comes to dealing damage from afar, which, if you can, why not, right? So, with that being said, I think that this is a negative on, you know, variety and uniqueness in the game of RuneScape, and perhaps we'll get it somewhere else, perhaps not, but, I mean, it is what it is, and I enjoy that higher prayer drain rate, I guess. But I don't know. It's these kind of decisions that, you know, you wonder if Jagex didn't listen to the players so much, if we would have stuff like this, or if they just went on their own path, if it would have stayed the same as it was. I think that would be an interesting discussion to have one day. So,
agreed.
Also, with next Angel of Death, it's now possible for that boss encounter to drop the Umbra cosmetic robe set. The icicles can no longer be moved with the kick ability or the shove special attack. Okay. that's I wonder who figured that out. the shove special attack, that one always felt useless with the dragon spear, and I guess other shove special attacks that exist today did have a reason for a few days to be used. Next, Angel of Death's elemental crystals will no longer retaliate against players. That's good. Seven players will now roll on the main drop table, while three players will now roll on the participation drop table. So I guess that's changed to encourage more participation and less, you know, supportive combat, I guess we could call it.
I don't know what the original numbers were, but...
Well, considering last week you could, you know, get drops if you were AFK'd, I think everyone could roll on... More people could definitely roll on the main drop table, so...
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fair then.
Yeah. And the font has been adjusted for some letters to distinguish between the I, L, 1, O, and 0 characters. You know, it's the little things in life that make life worth living, and these kind of changes when it comes to font are one of them. So... That's nice to hear. Personally, I still find the current font used in game kind of hard to read on a large display with a large resolution. So font scaling one day, Jagex, please. I would love that update. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but on a larger screen, I just find it hard to read, and I wish I could scale that font up. And it just doesn't feel right.
I haven't played RuneScape on my 1920 screen in forever, so
yeah,
I couldn't say right now.
Yeah, and I mean, when I play it on Windows compared to when I play it on the Mac has a higher pixel density, so it's harder to read.
Mm.
Also, just a little side note, unknown if it was in this patch week or silently, but Xenon from Clan Quest has noticed that interface drift, the thing that would happen when you would move your screen around, has probably been fixed in most cases or some cases. I think this might have been a patch note a couple weeks back, but a very interesting notice here by Xenon that if you move your screen... the interfaces will no longer float apart like they used to. So that's good. I love that kind of attention to detail that Jagex puts in with their new interfaces. Personally, I'm still hoping for snapping towards certain corners and whatnot. I think that'd be great. So.
Agreed.
All right, now we have a 120 Slayer FAQ that Jagex has put out this week, answering questions about 120 Slayer and why they're doing it. So what jumped out at you in the FAQ here?
The first thing that sort of stood out for me is how they are planning to make this split at like 99 Slayer.
Uh-huh. That could be very good or it could be very bad.
It doesn't sit well with me. They're saying that, like, people are asking, is there going to be a new Slayer Master? And their response is, you are thinking that 99 to 120 Slayer is the same as 0 to 99 Slayer. And I'm like, yes, of course we are. That, like, skills don't change drastically from one level upon the other. I mean, new training methods become available, definitely, but the underlying mechanics always stay the same. And the use of Slayer Masters and the use of Slayer Tasks is so fundamentally tied with Slayer that getting rid of that would have a huge impact in the skill, I think.
Yep. Yep.
And they are sort of like pretending that that is going to happen, like the entire way of training is going to change after 99 Slayer, which... sort of implying that this is a new skill altogether. It's almost like I don't want to say the word, but almost like a new elite skill that's
certainly what it sounds like. Yeah.
And if that's the case, I think you should name the thing by its name and say this is not the Slayer, this is something else.
It's the Elite Slayer skill.
You can call it whatever you want to. I don't really care about the actual name, but don't call it don't make it an extension to the skill.
Right.
Something new. And the other question is, if whether this is going to sit well with the community, because people like Slayer for Slayer. Do they really want something else and something new? Or are they looking for this new stuff? And that I felt they are being really vague about this, and that has spawned quite a few doubts about where they're going with this.
Right. And, I think we've seen before what happens when it comes to being vague on these updates. They can either turn out really good, like the Guthix Memorial, or really bad, like EOC, when that first came out. So I don't know which way that's going to go, but I think if you're going to call it Slayer, it should remain Slayer and should maintain most, if not all, of the same mechanics. It also said why they wanted to choose 120 Slayer first, and they said it was chosen because of its popularity, and because it bridges combat and non-combat, and because it's easy and people are looking for new challenges.
Can you explain to me what is non-combat about Slayer?
That's a pretty deep question. What is non-combat about Slayer? I'm not sure such a thing exists.
No, it's Slayer is inherently a combat thing. I like skilling, I don't like Slayer. It's combat. Like don't
You don't
talk
like
around
to, you don't
it
like
is.
to you don't like to Netflix and kill?
No.
Okay.
No. It's I don't know. I find this whole gratification of Slayer and this like that
It
I have
certainly
this
feels like
feeling.
it's a cater to the combat community, doesn't it? Because I.
I know I feel they wanna sound like, I mean, people that like combat, people that like Slayer, they're gonna be on board with this. They don't have to sell it to them. They have to sell it to the people who are like, oh,
You and me.
more Slayer. And they don't, that's how it sounds. But it's like there's no depth to it. It's like looking at it,
Right, and I
it
mean, you.
talks, it sounds a bit like marketing talk,
Yeah,
like.
and you say more Slayer, but remember they said at the end, I don't know if you watched the dev diary, the first dev diary for this, they said that at the end of Slayer, when you're approaching level 120, i.e. level 115 plus, you're going to be getting upwards of 800k Slayer XP an hour. So, I mean, it's not going to be a painful grind for this. I'm not trying to justify it in that way, but I think that there definitely still needs to be some talk about which way it's going to go. Because if 120 Slayer comes out and it's a completely different thing past level 100, how do you know if people are going to like that? Like, if it's mini bossing encounters, essentially a mini Grim Reaper or a Reaper Gem kind of task with higher level Slayer creatures like that, I know there are people who aren't going to be involved in that because it's going to feel like a mini boss encounter. If they go that way, I'm not saying we know they're going to go that way, but if they do and it feels that way, I think you're going to put a lot of people off who enjoy the casual element of Slayer. So, I don't know. And then, they go on to say more 120s if it suits the skill. Okay, so if it suits the skill, then it should stick with the original intent of the skill. And, I mean, I guess they could go 120 fishing next, maybe. That seems like a fairly popular non-combat skill they could start with, but who knows what it would look like.
I mean, I do like what they say have to say about like why Slayer is going to 120. It's Slayer 99 Slayer used to be a challenge. High level Slayer monsters used to be a challenge, but better gear comes out. People average on higher levels. It becomes easier and easier to do actual Slayer. That's a fact. And by
And
making it
that's fair.
120 and adding a new layer on top, making it hard again to like kill these high level creatures is a good thing. But this has been tried before. I am talking about living with wyverns, I'm talking about ripper demons, I'm talking about mammoths and the camel warriors. That was an attempt to add a more where you have to be more active, like a more interactive way of doing Slayer to it. And,
okay. Yeah, and I mean, they did talk about that.
And that was not popular.
You're right.
Now they want to provide a range of options where you can be like do a lot of interaction, be really active at the screen to get higher rates, or you can still do your Netflix and kill at like low experience rates. Where is it going to end up being? I mean, people apparently want to do Slayer, but the people that do like Slayer do like it because it's easy and they can just do it semi-AFK, I suppose.
Right. It's a good way to catch up on movies.
And they seem to be completely moving away from that. And I think this is completely missing the point right now. And still they're trying to sell it to like the people that like skilling, who like skilling exactly probably because they don't like combat, and Slayer is inherently a combat skill. So just looking through this whole thing, I don't know. I feel there's very little focus. There seems to be a very clear vision about where Slayer has to go. And I'm not saying that having a vision is wrong, but I'm not sure if the vision aligns with what players actually want in the end.
Yeah, or what players are going to be expecting from 120. They also did talk a bit about completionist amnesty here. And the core reason of it is to discourage a negative attitude towards comp requirements. Manifos will be full of new requirements. That's out there. And Jagex wants it to be explored, not rushed. And this may be a part of a new angle on comp requirements as a whole.
I mean, I think this aligns with basically we have been saying for a long while on this podcast that RuneScape has become this comp-focused thing. Like every Monday, a new update comes out, and you get this rush of people trying to complete it as soon as possible to get their cape back.
Exactly. And that's a bad thing.
Yes, that's bad for the game's long-term
because,
health.
Because, I mean, if you're doing that, you're not enjoying it.
Correct. And this change is basically has been long coming. I hope it's going to apply to a lot of new things, and especially with like all these expansions, like maybe by default people should have amnesty until the next expansion comes out for all the content added in an expansion.
And then I think you would be truly putting the completionist cape on a banner that says completionist if it has that amnesty through that period, because it means, okay, you have 3 months to complete this content, go at it. And you know, you can still have all the benefits of your comp cape while you're doing it. And if you get to the end, it means, hey, yes, you did it. You explored everything that we put into offer. And
correct.
I mean, I can see why Jagex wants to do that, because if I was a game designer, I wouldn't want people skipping through my content just, you know, to get to the end and get a comp cape. It's much like people who just do quests to, you know, get the quest cape requirement or get the requirement for comp. I think quests should be done to experience the lore, experience the story, and in essence, go on an adventure throughout the game world. But there are lots of people who don't do that because they just want the rewards at the end. So I can see why Jagex is doing it in that regard. I still personally think that, you know, it's perhaps a bit of a bad idea to have amnesty like this. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else from this?
I mean, they've been looking at things like the game economy, and I trust they will be careful with that.
Most definitely.
But otherwise, I mean, there's going to be changes to the things that you would expect that to be, they will also apply like a balancing pass over the entire skill, which I think is good. Hopefully it will make for a better experience in Slayer altogether.
Right. And
you know.
Actually, I do have a note on game balance in the economy about this. It kind of goes back to the patch notes. This week, Mod Timbo tweeted that he's on the project that is tasked with removing the resources from boss drops and whatnot. And I tweeted at him about this, about the energy and, you know, what might be a problem with the next Angel of Death encounter. He basically said in response to this that energy isn't a problem, and there was a noticeable blip on the amount coming into the game. Memorial of Guthix brought more in than Nex, or Telos even did. But as for Seeds, Nex didn't do any damage to either, but it is an ongoing problem. So JX is aware of all these things with the economy, and Mod Timbo is on the scene for this, and very responsive to concerns that players have about this, and very responsive to concerns that exist within updates that just came out. So I think we can all be rest assured that whatever happens with Slayer 120 or any of the updates that come out, JX will definitely watch the economy to see what's happening with this. And, you know, just the sheer genuine response that I got from Mod Timbo on this was really welcoming, and I am really pleased to see that they are doing this. So I think anyone who's worried about game balance with the economy and resources should definitely have a look at some of the stuff that Mod Timbo said on Twitter over the past week about balancing and whatnot. So I don't think there's too much of a worry there. All right. Sorry, I hijacked that. That just reminded me of something we had to talk about. Anything else in the 120 Slayer FAQ?
I think that's all.
Yeah. All right. You can, of course, check this out on their forums, and there was the full dev diary that kind of went into more detail than this. So, okie dokie. Moving on, I just wanted to say a couple words about this week's update and what this means going forward for the general pace of the year. You know, update weeks like this with various community events and whatnot, I think, is what we can expect in the inter-expansion period. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this definitely feels like a week we would have after Menaphos was released and we were waiting for the next expansion to come out. You know, maybe a community event, a few patch notes here and there, an FAQ, and some news about an upcoming in-game thing, i.e. bonus XP weekend. So I think that that's definitely, if you take a look at this week and you want to see what it's going to be like in between expansions, I say look at this week and you're going to have a pretty good picture of it. And with that being said, I hope that they do come up with another flavor of community events, because the one where you do scaling, collect fragments to complete it is kind of getting a little bit old. So I don't know if you share that same view, that this is what inter-expansion week updates will look like.
I think we'll see a lot more of this. I do think that, like, it's called a patch week, but even the patch notes were pretty bad. Like,
yeah,
there was nothing really mentioned, like no interesting ninja update or anything. I think this could be more considered an update week, and it looks like Jagex is still too scared to actually call it a no update week. I hope we're going to see that change and just more honest in, like, we'll release normal patches. Like, people should just start assuming that patches come out every week, and we should not have things called patch weeks anymore.
Yeah.
Patch weeks should be the default.
Yeah.
And when we get an update, we should be excited about it.
Yeah, and I think that's why they're cutting back on the behind-the-scenes videos as well. So so that when you get that update, you're excited about it. So I hope that there's no one out there that's too upset with this week's update. All right. Also this week, Jax has launched a phishing awareness campaign. And no, that's not how to go fishing in RuneScape. This is phishing with the PH on it. Ways to keep your account safe and to avoid scams on Twitter and the internet in general relating to RS. They'll be doing a number of things about this, including phishing awareness competitions hosted on the events forum with three players selected at random to each win 3 months of RuneScape membership and a RuneScape or old school RuneScape bond. Spotlight on our recently updated phishing support article, which they link to on the websites. and also informative tweets throughout the week providing advice on how to prevent yourself from being phished, along with Twitter polls to gauge community awareness around phishing and information security. You know, it was interesting
Don't swim around in the elf waterfall. That's going to help a lot with not being fished.
That's a good one, because so many people are going to be up there doing fishing for this week's bonus XP weekend.
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, it was interesting to see this come out in a news posting, because the news posting where it came out only had about a paragraph in it, and that was it. And it just linked to this page about the phishing campaign awareness. So, you know, I would have thought they would have done a video or something along the lines of that, because of how important account security has been to Jagex, and you know, having updates like the player's stronghold of safety and security in game, as well as their constant emphasis on, oh, no, don't share your password, don't enter your password on strange websites, don't reuse your RuneScape password, and so on and so forth. But anyways, I think that this is an admission that, you know, perhaps RuneScape phishing isn't as pervasive as it used to be, and it's a lot more managed now than it was in the past. I'm just making assumptions here, but that's what I would guess from this page and, you know, just the general phishing awareness campaign. Which, I mean, if you play RS, it's definitely something you should be aware of, because even if you've never been phished on RS, it's a good thing to be aware of, because you can get phished anywhere on the internet, right?
Correct.
Google, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. Anywhere you log in can try and have malicious phishing websites and take over your accounts. So I would say, if you are at all questioning what phishing is and you're wondering, have I might have ever been a victim of this, definitely have a look at their phishing page and see what they have to say about it. So,
hey, Shane.
Yeah.
Did you know that if you type your password in a chat, it will be replaced by stars?
Oh, really?
Yeah, you should try it.
Okay, I'll try that as soon as I log in. that's an old classic one. Did you know that if you head on over to certain websites and you enter your RuneScape name and password, you'll get a free amount of GP?
Oh my, I should try that.
And of course, these are two of the classic phishing exploits or ways people take advantage of others on the game of RuneScape. Alrighty, well, that's it for our RS segment this week. We're going to move on to our listener question. I'll let you read this one, Sirion.
Oh, dear. Okay, it's a question from Tycho Elf, which is a very dear clanny to ours. And he asks, with RuneScape expansion approaching, larger updates will be released in one package instead of several ones. Jagex have stated that they will keep the players active between the dates of these large releases. What kind of activities do you expect, and what kind of activities would you like to see between the releases to keep the players active? P.S. I like your singing voice, Sirion. Dear regards from Tycho Elf, the elven elfborn of the elves.
I think that has to do with the time we did something on Discord, right?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, what kind of activities do you expect? I think if we keep the current pace, you can expect a lot of community activities like we currently see in-game with the Valentine's Day event. In addition to that, oh boy, I'm not even sure what they have done to break the mold in the last year outside of this. It's kind of hard to think of anything different that they've done. So at this point, I don't expect them to do much else different than they're doing right now. What would I like them to do? You know, I think something that definitely needs to be done with regards to the game in general is a bigger emphasis on the mini games. Yes, we have the mini game spotlight and whatnot, but you know, maybe we could see a week or 2 weeks in some of these inter-expansion months where you take the spotlighted minigame of the time, It could be something Jagex chooses to promote, or it could just be whatever spotlighted at the time. And, you know, rather than, you know, just getting bonus XP from it or getting more rewards from it, you get a higher chance to earn pieces of that skill's elite skilling outfit that was initially available on Treasure Hunter. Even if it's not in-game, with the way of making them through divination. I think this would be a great thing to do, and I think it would certainly, you know, like, we don't have the shark outfit in-game. You can't make that one with skilling fragments right now. You can only make
the... Not yet.
Not yet. You can only make the ethereal and golem outfits right now. So let's say, for example, this month we were doing a spotlight on... What's a good D&D that no one really does these days? Fishing trawler. It's an old one, but people don't really do it unless it's on spotlight. So if you did fishing trawler and you got within a certain percentage of doing well there, you would have a chance to be entered into a game-wide sweepstakes where Jagex would give out, say, I don't know, maybe 1,000, maybe 3,000, maybe 5,000 pieces of, or rather, maybe not pieces, but okay, maybe 1,000 to 3,000 or 5,000 pieces of one of the shark skilling outfits. Then for 500 lucky people who do not already have the outfit and took part in the spotlighted minigame, you would receive the full outfit for one of the fishing outfits. And then maybe you could make it the deal even sweeter and say that 1 in 25, 25 people in total, will get all the outfits combined that they're missing for doing something on fishing trawler over this past week. Now, granted, you wouldn't want to do this month by month. You would want to do it, you know, maybe once per quarter after each expansion. I think that would be a great thing to do and would add some variety to the scene. There's also Maud Osborne's Bank Bidders idea, which I believe is coming in March. So that might be another example of a thing that we would see. So I think those are my two ideas of what I'd like to see in the inter-expansion periods.
I would like to see bottle quests or bottle content in general.
Oh, that would be great.
Because like the expansions are going to have lots of like new assets. We have lots of assets in game. I think bottle content is definitely a nice way of expanding upon expanding the game content.
Right.
And I mean, Jagex promised us bottle quests and never gave us, so yeah, that might be a thing.
Yeah, because the only real bottle quest we got was the Gobi quest. And
correct.
I think if you look back at RuneScape history, some of the greatest quests and the quests that everyone remembers are indeed the standalone quests that really aren't a part of any storylines. So mm-hmm. They could definitely do that. I personally wouldn't mind a sequel to the Enlightened Journey quest.
I am a huge fan of the My Arm quest.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's some good Jagex humor there, and it's just... probably one of the best quests. I also think One Small Favor gets too much hate. That, I mean, just look at all the dialogue. It's funny. Like, it's a bit of a pain, but it's so funny. So like that kind of stuff. I mean, I something like One Small Favor uses pretty much just NPCs already in the game.
Yep.
It's just adding dialogue to them.
Yep.
Should not be that much work. Like,
so you're saying you want a sequel to One Small Favor that could be twice as long?
Yeah, well, not saying that, but like, things like that should not be too hard. They can really like add an extra layer, make the world more alive.
Oh yeah, I mean, back
always
in the day,
have something to do.
Back in the day, it certainly felt as though they were cranking out a new quest every week or so.
Yeah, I mean, when you start playing the game, like as maybe as a free player, right? Lots of NPCs, you talk to them and you start a quest. Like there's stuff to do everywhere. And when you're in that exploration mode, I think that's amazing. And like adding like lots of tiny things everywhere around makes that possible again. And sure, like you and I did all the quests already that are there. So when the new quest comes out, we go there with a goal of finishing it again. But there are still players that go to like finishing up a whole bunch of quests, and they can still explore things and find things. People that have an Iron Man can experience this still. And
yep.
I mean, it seems like a very small investment for something that can add so much to the game. So I'm really hoping that we get more of that. And not just, I mean, if they want to do a bottle mini game, that's also fine by me. Like any content that just reuses assets is fine by me. Even if it is just mini quests, like just tiny things that add stuff all around to do.
You know, I think like, we can take that one step further and say any content that effectively makes RuneScape feel as though it did back in the old heyday when, you know, new content, new minigames were coming out every other week, using resources already there. I think if they were to just, you know, add some content like that, it doesn't need to be every week in the expansion period, maybe once a month, I think that would go a long way to making the game feel... I don't want to say fresh, because saying making it feel fresh implies that it's stale, but making it feel like how it used to. And, you know, I think that that might be actually a good thing to do. You know, if there are ever people that are, you know, have taken a long sabbatical from RS and want to try something that's there, they might find that, oh, this feels exactly like it used to. So that's good.
So. Yeah. And other than that, just Ninja updates. Like, there's so many annoying things in the game. Like, there's so many things that could be improved with quality of life upgrades. Like, not just quests, but, like, just interactions that are a bit too bothersome. And spending, like, have one developer spend, like, 1 or 2 days on these things is, it's going to make people feel a lot happier going through those interactions. And I believe that there's a lot to win still around the entire game. And... yeah, so those two things I hope will come out. What I think will come out is a lot of repetition, a lot of reuse of like community event and like gathering stuff like we did for Valentine's Day. It's probably a good indication of something we'll see at least every month. And in a way, it's sad. Like I said, there's always something new in the game, and I just sometimes want to log in and do whatever I want. So the question is, do we really need something every week to keep players active? Like, I know there's this group of completionist people that have done everything in the game that there is to do, but there's also a lot of players that still have so much to achieve.
That's right. And that's right.
I feel I don't always get the chance of like just going back to the basics and like do some stuff and not have to bother about some community event, because now I feel that every week I have to log in every day, take part in this event, take part of that event. Like, I feel like I'm missing out if I don't get my fabric parts every day. So just taking off that pressure and say like, this week that's just absolutely nothing, do whatever you want, I don't think that would be bad either, and people will find their own stuff to do. I think everybody's sort of scared that this would cause like half the people to quit. I think people will be fine with it.
Yeah, no one's gonna quit RS over this, and I think that it's clear. You know, one thing I'd like to see, I don't know if they could do this publicly or would want to do this publicly, would be a list of all the ninja fixes that are to come, the ones that are in development and the ones that are have been signed off on and will be in game soon. I would like to see a list of ninja fixes in progress. Granted, there could be some that they might not be able to put on there that deal with the economy or game mechanics or stuff like that. But don't you think that would be interesting to see what are we currently working on the ninja team?
I would like it. I would really like it. But like we have this thing where players think they know better. We have this thing where people have like take incomplete information, fill it in with the way they want it to be, and then when it comes out, it's completely and that's going to happen if they start exposing that data. And while it would be super interesting in and seeing what they're going to work on. I think in terms of the health of the game and just in general, I
might
think
not be the
better.
Best idea.
Indeed.
Okie dokie then. Well, that's it for our questions this week. We're going to move on to tech news right away. But first, if you want to send these in to us, you can call 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632 if you're in the U.S. Email questions at rsbnb.com or leave us a DM on Twitter, which is at rsbnb. Alrighty, so some updates for tech news this week. We got some numbers on current smartphone user statistics. And oh boy, it is not good for BlackBerry or Windows in this roundup right here. Right now, 99.6% of new smartphones are running on either iOS or Android. Apple has retaken the crown from Samsung when it comes to sales, but of course Android is still the dominant platform. The biggest gains came from China. According to the latest figures, both Android and iOS expanded their share of the market in 2016, while sales of Windows and BlackBerry continued their free fall to the base of a cliff. Boy, that's some editorializing right there. Gartner, a research company that derives its figures from a range of sources, said that 1.1 million Windows smartphones were sold in Q4 of 2016, down from 4.4 million in Q4 of 2015. Similarly, BlackBerry devices fell from 906,000 to 208,000. And for the first time since Q4 of 2014, Apple has retaken pole position from Samsung with 77 million iPhones shipped last quarter versus 76.8 million units of Samsung phones shipped.
I guess exploding phones might have something to do with that.
Oh boy, that was certainly a meme of your time on the podcast last year, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this really isn't that surprising. Microsoft really hasn't announced anything new, I think, since 2015, so that's fair to see why their numbers are going down, obviously, though they have the whole unified Windows platform, which is great. BlackBerry, non-existent, as expected, pretty much a shell of a company at this point. Looks like we're just going to be having a tug of war here between Apple and Samsung for the main market share.
It's going to be interesting because, like, we have these Google phones now, like, wedged in, and it's not a worldwide availability. Like, it's available here in the UK and in the US. I'm not sure about Canada.
Yeah, Canada has the Pixel.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see where that's going to go. It seemed to have, like, gotten good reception, so...
Yeah, ads for the Google Pixel phones here were everywhere. I mean,
same here.
Movie theaters, every second TV commercial or so, you would see an ad for Google Pixel. So, I mean, it's not as though they weren't on the market at all. And, you know, maybe there just wasn't enough time for the sales to really register in any meaningful way here. But I can definitely see Pixel, you know, being more than Microsoft and BlackBerry in this regard, because I mean, come on, it's from Google. Google knows how to market things, right? So
the point, like, the biggest problem with, like, the Pixel is like it's only available in a few countries.
Yeah, it's super,
like,
expensive,
not a worldwide thing
for an Android phone.
And it's expensive for, yeah. Say, like, just a bit related news to Samsung. You hear about this explosion in the factory that makes batteries for Samsung phones?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay.
Just a bit of related news, right?
I figured I'd put that.
You're just kind of hanging that one a bit in there, just to kind of get some memories of last year.
Yeah. It's just, I'm just reinforcing that. Like, while it's a meme, it's a meme for a reason.
Yeah.
It's funny
also,
because it's true.
Also, speaking of batteries in a somewhat fatal way. There was a crash in San Francisco area of a Tesla car, and the Tesla car, you know, hit a tree and it got impaled and whatnot. And, you know, rather than the engine flying out as it would in a normal car, what happened here is the battery pack got impaled. And what happens when you puncture a lithium ion battery and it exposes to air? So, this car this Tesla car exploded because its battery packs got impaled, and the poor female driver unfortunately didn't walk away from that one. So that is actually a problem with electric cars, that if they get impaled in their battery packs, they can explode. So just on the topic of exploding batteries. All right. Also in tech news, Amazon and Google want to turn their respective smart home speakers into home telephone replacements. So you will no longer need a home phone. The idea is that you have an Amazon Echo or Google Home, and you can use it to make or receive phone calls. They want to add this functionality as soon as this year. So I'm guessing this would probably use your cell phone connection over Bluetooth, I'm guessing, if it's in the house.
Or some VoIP product, maybe? I don't know. Maybe it goes to Google Voice?
Yeah, Amazon is considering multiple options. The Echo is said that it could get its own phone number. Call forwarding could also enable calls to that number to be answered remotely on a cell phone and vice versa. Another option is to sync a user's existing phone number and contacts with the Echo, and incoming calls would ring on a user's cell phone, so that's going both ways there. Though it is reported that both Amazon and Google are developing a calling tool themselves, or they could allow external providers such as Skype or Vonage onto their platforms. You know, this is interesting, I think, because there are people who have a landline, and there are people who don't have a landline. If you have a landline, you have it because
You need it for your internet connection.
Yeah, maybe. Or it could just be because, you know, you've had it for so long and it's dirt cheap, so you just keep it around, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know that's the case here. So I think it would be very interesting to, you know, have these devices built into these houses, the home devices, where you no longer have a traditional phone, but it effectively acts as a landline, because the number one reason you have a landline is so that you can use your phone inside your house without needing to find your cell phone. So, I don't know. I think this just, you know, really shows the way we're going into the future with this kind of technology, and it's going to be really great. I can't wait to see if Apple comes up with any device like this. That might be very interesting. Because as we all know right now, Siri really isn't that great compared to the other AI options out there. So, I mean, the example is that if you want to make a phone call, you just say call whoever or call and dictate out a number and away you go. The only downside, of course, is I guess that everyone else hears it, which, I mean, if you're with family and whatnot, that's probably not a problem, but you could maybe put on a Bluetooth headphone or something like that as well. So
that would be cool, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, this kind of takes it, I think, also to a next kind of Star Trek level when you look at that, because there you can basically just talk and away you go, you're on with whomever, right?
Yeah, I mean, from what I know, like the Google Home already, like, is smart. If you have put multiple in your house, it will figure out what's the closest. Like, imagine the call automatically just switching between homes while you're walking through the house.
Yep.
Like, we can, it's going to become like hands-free calling to at the next level. Like, it's literally nothing you need. And I'm going to be curious to see what the quality is going to be on like both the receiving and the sending end.
If you're on VoIP, it's going to be great, because VoIP is just so much better than the standard phone line.
Yeah, it's just like, how is the internal mic going to like translate to like overlying to other people?
And are you going to be able to find a small enough headset that you can, you know, just put on if you want to have a private talk with someone, you know?
Yeah. I mean, have you ever tried like doing phone calls on speakers on phones? Like, it has become better, but it's still a lot less than just holding it to your ear in terms of the person on the other side.
Yeah.
So, like, if I'm calling you from one of my home devices, like, how well are you going to hear everything? That's going to be an issue.
Right, background noise and all that. And, you know, I think that this use case for these devices is actually the first thing for me that would jump out as a reason to get one of these. It just seems like a great way of kicking the phone out if you don't want to be using your smartphone, right?
That is correct. I mean, I think it's in a way it's a replacement for a lot of things. It depends. Like, how much do you use Siri or Google Assistant or Alexa? Well, Alexa is not a thing, I suppose. Or Cortana. Like, how much do you use that off the bat already? And if you don't use it a lot, is the reason because you don't want to get your phone, or is the reason that you don't find the interface very intuitive?
The reason I don't use Siri a lot is because it can only do basic things like create reminders, make calls, send messages.
Yeah. But like the point is, like, as soon as you want to do some complicated interaction, it's going to be faster to walk to a computer and then just do it.
For now, at least. And I think in the next few years, we'll definitely see natural language processing advance. And that is what is needed to make these devices like Google Home and Alexa work and understand us better.
Mm-hmm.
So, alrighty, what's our last piece of tech news?
So, the last piece of tech news, I wanted to go a bit into like game development, and in particular, indie game development. And as you might know, I have some experience in the field. I would not call me an expert, but like, I mean, I've been there, and I think a lot of you will be frequent Steam users. And if you at least follow Steam in some sense, you'll notice how many games are being released to Steam every day.
Yeah,
it's like
was it you were this? I was having a discussion with someone. I wasn't sure if it was you. No, it wasn't you. It was our gaming group on the RSBNB Discord. A bunch of us were discussing this. And the vast majority of games coming into Steam these days are independent developers that might not be that great. So this is a very interesting thing to go with your story. So carry on.
Correct. Yeah. So that's a thing. I have to be careful here because I am under some form of NDA over how exactly the internals of Steam work because we have a game there. But like in principle, it's fairly easy to actually get your game on Steam. It's like you need to know the right people. And a couple of years ago, Steam introduced this platform called Greenlight. And the idea of Greenlight was you pay like $100 and those $100, like, they're not for Valve. They're not, like, for processing costs. They are just there to make sure that not everybody just puts everything on there. You need to make some sort of investment. All the money actually goes to charity. So all good there, and then you can put your game on there. And as soon as you have enough upvotes, your game automatically gets transferred to, like, actual Steam. It's simple as that. The idea sounds pretty solid. Like, it allows every indie developer to go to Steam, which back in the day when Greenlight came out, it was in a way, if you got on Steam with your game, that was your marketing platform. That was your marketing done. Because like, how often did you see a game on Steam?
Right.
And these days, like, you get swamped with games on Steam, and
yeah,
90%
that's what we were
noticing. Of them are, they are copies. They use assets of, like, they build a game in Unity. They use the assets from, like, the free assets from the asset store. They slap something together. They sell it, and they hope to get some money out of the trading cards because, like, you get some money for it. So if you have a game with Steam trading cards, every transaction that is made with the trading cards, you get a small share of that money as well as game developer.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes, it's not a lot, but I mean, like, there are people on Steam that are like collectors. So it's like this is it's very weird. The whole thing works a bit weird, and there's lots of moving parts. But yeah, so Greenlight was not really a success. There was so many games. There was no clear way of finding out when you were being added to the Steam shop. There was an easy way around it. If you like could get in contact with Steam directly, you could basically bypass Greenlight. So all in all, like, while there was like a lot of good things about it, there was also a lot of bad things about it, and Steam has or Valve has finally made a decision to shut it down, and this was a long time coming. But there's going to be something new that's going to replace it, and that's going to be called Steam Direct, and it's going to be very similar, except for it's going to cut out the whole part of having to gain upvotes.
Oh,
for
good.
Let me quickly skim to the article. Yes. So instead of having to go to like Greenlight, what happens is you skip that part. You just make sure that all your documentation is fine. Steam wants like a car, wants to verify you're a real person. They want to make sure your taxes taken care of, all the documents are taken care of, that kind of stuff. You need to register for US taxes because that's where Valve is distributed, that kind of stuff. Then you need to pay a certain fee, and they haven't decided what that fee will be yet. That might be quite high. They are thinking it could go up as high as $5,000. You will get back that money. They don't say how, but it's not like a fixed fee. The only reason they do it is they want to create some sort of threshold to make sure that not everybody can just release games on Steam. You need to, if you are a dedicated game developer and you have to pay $2,000 to get on this Steam platform, you'll do that.
Yeah, like, that's not too much.
And if you get it back, even better. But if you just want to troll, You're not gonna spend $2,000 to put a tour game on Steam because you're probably not gonna get it back then either.
Needed to do this. This needed to be done. There's so much garbage on there right now.
Steam is absolutely broken right now. It's great for distribution of games, but it's a terrible discovery platform.
Yep.
And this is due to the lack of care that Valve has given the platform. It's their fault. The website is not designed well. The processes are not designed well. Both from the game developer's point of view, as the let's say game critics or game reviewers point like perspective, this is very obvious. If you are a very observant consumer, you will also have noticed this. There are so many problems with this platform, and this is only one of them. I'm actually quite happy they will make this change now, and I really hope that we can get rid of this thing where we get so many games that are just there to make a few bucks.
And, this is a real problem, not only for the game developers, but also for people looking for games. Because, we were looking for new multiplayer co-op games, and, just so much junk on here that it's just hard to find. What's a real game and what's not.
It hurts indie game developers. So
I can imagine.
We made a pretty good game. It sounds maybe like begging, but our reviews are exclusively positive. I think we have one negative review, and that's somebody who found the game too boring. I mean, that happens. Like, not everybody likes the game equally much. But you need to reach an audience, and indie developers don't have a huge marketing budget, and a platform needs to connect consumer with the developer and the products, and that's good for the consumer, that's good for the developers, and it's good for the platform because it drives sales and they get a part of it as well. So I think like a lot of indie companies will have died because of not being able to get through all these tour games, and I think it's the responsibility of Steam as a platform to fix that.
Yep, most definitely. And, I mean, not only for you guys, but also for those of us trying to find good games here, because if not, then we're going to look to other options. And I don't think anything else exists that does what Steam does right now. So,
So, I mean, there's other like shop fronts, if you want to call it that way. I mean, there's
Right, but nowhere
things
is
like
it more
Humble,
expansive.
things like GOG, I think is one, or is it the other one? I think it's GOG, right?
Yeah.
So there's like other stores that people use, and I mean, a lot of things then still give out Steam code, but at least you can use them for discoverability. And I mean, it begs to the question, like maybe Steam should refocus, maybe Steam should become purely the distribution platform. But I mean, that's gonna hurt
Yeah,
Valve because
I don't know if
they
that's a
get
good
their
thing
money.
or not,
So
but yeah.
this is definitely something to keep an eye on. And I mean, I come from this from like an indie developer standpoint, and I'm not really an indie developer anymore, I would say. But I still have this perspective. But even from a like, even if you're listening to this and like, how does this concern me? This is really a consumer issue as well, and it's important that you're protected. And the same thing happens everywhere across the board. Like, look at like the app stores. How
Oh,
many
I wholly agree with
Flappy Bird clones can you see? How many Minecraft clones can you
Yeah.
find? How many? It's all these clone games. They're not good. They're just people trying to make a quick buck, and it hurts the consumer base. So
Yep.
there.
And I mean, it definitely needs to be fixed because it's good for no one. So.
Yeah. So Valve has been known to be really, really slow with these things. It has taken them years to get as far as they are, and I am not seeing any traces of that speeding up anytime soon. But every step that is made in the right direction is a step in the right direction. So let's hope this might improve. We'll find out what the specifics are over the next few weeks. The exact plans are not ready yet, but yeah, that's happening. So
All right. Well, it's good news for Steam once they get this sorted out, and it'll be good news for everyone, so we will definitely pay close attention to that going forward. All right. So we do have an achievement. I'm sorry, no, I'm getting ahead of myself. We do have our skill of the month update, the final skill of the month before bonus XP weekend. The fishing skill of the month is currently underway. Aderon Chronon, aka Touchpad Pro, maintaining a linear trajectory, 32.7 million XP gained thus far. Jamandy 52, 23.1 million XP gained in second place. And Undoer in third place, just took that from Parnassius with 16.6 million experience gain. So it'll be very interesting to see what you guys all do over the course of Double XP weekend and the week following. Lots of fishing XP going to be had, I think. Wow. You gonna be doing any fishing over the double XP week?
well, I won't be there, so not
Well,
really.
the tail off period.
I probably will be focusing on getting my combat skills up. Like, convention is coming along quite nicely, so I need to make sure that my combat is there, up there as well, so that I can finish off the maxing thing, and I don't know, refocus on other things, I suppose.
Okay, then. Well, we do have an achievement this week, and that is Silver Wiz 9 got 99 smithing on February 11th, 2017. Silver Wiz 9 is Paul or PFK99s. He was to come on the show. I'll have to send him a message about that achievement and tell him that we talked about that on the show and all the other things that the good old PFK99s is known for. If you guys know what I'm talking about, those of you guys listening to the show who've been around for a long time, pat yourself on the back. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
All right, I'll fill you in later. All right, so the pick of the week this week is a new TV show that appeared 2 weeks ago, or I'm sorry, 1 week ago. And this is the spin-off to the ever-popular TV series 24. Whoa, I'm trying to find the Fox website for this, but apparently that's not the first result on Google. The first result for this on Google is IMDb. So, anyways, the new show is called 24 Legacy. It's set 3 years after the last installment of 24. It's got a completely new cast, a completely new main protagonist, and a completely different approach to the threat that's being undertaken in this day. And I should explain for those of you guys who haven't heard of 24 or watched 24 before, the name of the show is 24 for the reason that each season takes place over one day or 24 hours. In previous years, what they would do is they would have 24 actual episodes in the entire season, which was really great. But this season and the last one, they've gone down to 12 and compressed the last hour of the show into 12 hours. So you get a standard, you get 11 standard episodes of 24 and then 1 hour to wrap the entire thing up that is compressed like any other TV show you would have. So you're actually watching a real-time show, believe it or not, when you watch 24. And that is what makes 24 so interesting compared to everything else out there. Because if you look at any other show, on as one example, at the start of the show, they might be on one end of town, right? But after the commercial break, they're just on the other side of town right away, right? Not so in 24. In 24, they actually pay attention to how long it would take to get from one side of town to the other side of town, and that's incorporated into the show. Also, if someone says, you have 1 hour to get me this money, in 24, it's actually 1 hour. So the real-time aspect plays a huge role in what makes 24 what it is. And there were 8 seasons of 24 before they started doing their spinoffs. They did one previous spinoff a couple years ago, and then there's this new spinoff that started this year with a completely new cast. All in all, it's action drama oriented, focused on around preventing terrorism and other threats of that nature. It's got a bit of a political drama to it as well, but not as much as the counterterrorism aspect of it. So if you like action drama based TV shows and you think you might like something to do with counterterrorism with a slight political spin to it, 24 is probably a show that you should watch. And lots of interesting tech lingo in it as well. Sometimes they get things hilariously wrong. But, I mean, that's all part of the show. So, I think once they showed Euler's number as an IP address, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, which, of course, doesn't really make sense because that would be too long for it. And it starts with 27, I believe, which is impossible for an IP address. But, see, those are the kind of things that they slip in. And that's how you know it's a TV show and not real life. But I would highly recommend that everyone who wants a action-based TV show that they can watch once a week every Monday, have a look at this 24. It's on Fox in the US and Canada. I'm not sure where you can get it in other countries, but it is streaming on the Fox website. So that's 24 Legacy. All right. So what have you been up to this week?
I have not played a lot of RuneScape, to be honest. I have mostly been working on assembling my new computer. So that's really exciting. Finally got a desktop in my home again.
Very nice. You'll have limited to share some stats once it's all set up.
I'm actually using it right now, but I'm still waiting for some cabling to come in so I can light up the final things. Really exciting to have that done. Looking forward to playing RuneScape on like higher settings. Let's see what NXT actually can give us.
Yeah.
I've just been like modeling along, doing a Valentine event. That's all, really.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds good. New computers are always fun, and it enables us to play RuneScape all that much better. As for me this week, Valentine's Day event, getting ready for bonus XP weekend. I unfortunately remembered that I forgot to buy secondaries, or farm my secondaries in my case, for Herblore, so kind of in a rush to do that right about now. So That's what I've been up to this week. Also been doing some divination, some thieving, and just some general things around RS that have been shown to me by way of achievements and Harmony Moss Pillars and daily task sets and whatnot. So,
have you been, are you going to just do Herblore this?
Yeah, pretty much Herblore. This is the first time I'm not planting a full tree farming run on Double XP weekend, believe it or not.
Wow.
So that's a bit weird. I actually gave a tree run to Xenon in exchange for some Herblore stuff. I don't think it was an equitable trade, but I did it nonetheless. So, and you know, I was questioning why I did that, because in Clan Quest Monopoly, I said, okay, if you win this, I will give you a farming run. But he didn't win, so I'm not sure why I did that. But anyways, that's a fun little thing that we've been doing at Clan Quest. And I think, yeah, Kira won that version of Monopoly. So that was a fun game that I hosted. Mm-hmm. And that's just another reason why, if you guys are listening to this, the Questing Clan, you should check us out. All the fun stuff like that ends up happening. So, I don't think there's anything else on this episode of RSBNB Update.
That's all from me.
Yeah, I agree. So, with that being said, we'll see you next week, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Bye.